Great, thank you. Thank you. Yeah, I'm more of a, going to take more of a literary approach to the Manipulus Forum. So I also do not pretend to be any kind of an expert in the Manipulus Flora. So if you end up concluding that I'm only here for my devastating good looks, that's just fine too. So with its series of quotations concerning...
You just want to start off with an introduction also for...
I'm sorry?
I'm Robin Law.
Oh, I see. You know, just for this kind of thing. Yeah. Who am I again, Chris? Maybe you should... Yeah. So I'm Robin Law. I'm from the English and Film Studies Department at Wilfrid Laurier University. And I'm going to be talking about patience in the Manipulus Forum. I'm looking particularly at the dilemma of patience provided from the recent online edition of the Manipulus Forum. Gee, I wonder who did that. Okay. So we've got, though, a series of quotations concerning patience from classical authors in this work, also through Gregory the Great to Bernard of Clairvaux. So the Manipulus Forum would seem to be a promising work in which to trace the history of the genre of patience literature. Patience literature is a genre that features and praises explicitly or implicitly the ability to endure, quote, end of quote, that Brent D. Shaw notices as a developing aspect of self-definition in characters from various Hellenic, Jewish, and Latin works starting about 200 years before Christ and then going on, I would say, to the present day. In 2012, I argue that this genre becomes more concerned with gender as the Middle Ages go on, but my focus here will be on the implications of the patience lemma in the Manipulus Forum as a literary and intellectual construct. Certainly this work duly conveys the many and copious issues involved with situating an abstract concept like patience within the intellectual traditions and interpretive communities that exist in the later Middle Ages. And importantly, the compiler or compilers of the Manipulus Forum in this sense demonstrate a relatively thorough understanding of patience as opposed to merely gathering together an unconnected series of quotations on the subject. In fact, any study of patience on the verge of the early modern period is going to be fraught with this period's manifold archival discouragements. I remember very well my earliest mentor in medieval history describing attempts to organize archival material from the 15th century. Ah, he said, you're entering a rabbit warren. I also remember glancing from a volume of English historical documents concerning the Anglo-Saxon era to the corresponding volume in the same series concerning the 15th century, and looking at that bulging volume with a feeling of intimidation. The papal records are in no less a challenging state, due in part to the fact that at one point in the 15th century, there were no less than three competing popes all reigning at the same time. And one suspects that if Rob Ford were to go back in time, he might have a good chance at the job. So, as one might expect, late medieval discussions of patience, typically in homiletic form, of course, reflect something of the archival and political loose, baggy monstrousness, if I can quote Henry James, of the day. But we have a wonderful scholar who did work on patience a few years ago, Ralph Hanna, in his study of patience, has demonstrated what most patience discussions from the period look like. And this is really valuable to us. And this is the example is number one on the handle, kind of telescoped in two big long paragraphs. This is also presumably representative of the kind of intellectual discourse that would result from habitual use of compendiums like the Manipulus Forum, which is why I include it. The lack of attention to logic and even to continuity is quite obvious. Quotations are strung together perhaps simply because they would seem to contain appealing images, and that's about it. A general impression of the passage, as Hannah describes it, in his relentlessly optimistic fashion, is fine and, I think, deliberately provocative disorder. And that's one way of looking at this. Hence, an important question for my paper is, how does the patience lemma in the Manipulus Forum demonstrate order emerging from the chaos of typical 15th century patience discussions, if it does so at all? My own research on the intellectual history of patience suggests that there were three broad traditions in the treatment of patients through the Middle Ages: righteous or miraculous patients, intellectual patients, and personification of patients. In the high and later Middle Ages, as Hannah has noticed, many of the sermon collections, encyclopedias, and other general collections of knowledge downplay or even omit definitions of patients in favor of largely unorganized examples in great profusion of impatient behaviors that lead the perpetrators to ruin and provide many opportunities for dramatic condemnation. One need only examine the Manipulus Florum's quotations concerning Ira in order to get examples of this kind of material. With regard to patience, however, the Manipulus Florum duly offers Gregory the Great's definition of the virtue, so it is concerned with definition, which is an interesting contact, right? So this is number two on the handout, which I translate, to endure external evils with equanimity. And then this definition appears, rings is a better term, throughout the Middle Ages again and again. The inclusion of this quotation is not surprising. It comes from and plays a huge part in Gregory's famous sermon number 35 concerning the Gospels, which takes as its text, "In patience they shall possess their souls." And was, according to Hannah, significantly here, this is the single most widely quoted work of the Middle Ages, is Gregory's Patience Sermon. So this definition by Gregory demonstrates his realization, the realization shared by the Church Fathers more generally, that patience is not essentially Christian. The pagan, particularly a pagan of a stoical frame of mind, could demonstrate the virtue. Consequently, this realization becomes one of the reasons that a bald definition of patience tends to become lost in much late medieval sermon literature. After providing, or more often not, Gregory's or a similar definition, the fathers typically go on, including the early Christian apologists and later medieval writers as well, to assert patience as part of God's perfection. The virtue comes only and always from him. And a typical example from the Manipulus Florum would be the quotation from Augustine's De Patientia, which is number three on your handout. Okay? Yeah, number three. Though this text is not representative of the quotations in the Manipulus Florum as a whole, I would argue. Then the fathers often describe acts of patience as miracles and or as imitations of Christ's behavior on the cross. Such deeds show obedience to God's commands to forgive, to love one's enemies, and to turn the other cheek, of course. But then the capacity for endurance of a saint, or at least a superhuman individual of some kind, will be necessary in order to accomplish patience. And divine power will be necessary in order to accomplish perfect patience. An ordinary human cannot imitate the divine creation and redemption of the world, or encompass all of creation with an idea, in the way that God, according to the theologians, embraces all the world with his patience. Nevertheless, this inability does not keep Gregory and other patience apologists from listing Christ and the saints explicitly as examples for the faithful to follow. In short, most of the early apologists and hagiographers rarely, if ever, concern themselves with defining patience per se, and this habit extends to later medieval writers as well. Instead, they really just presuppose the existence of patience and then sanctify it as miraculous, or righteous patience is probably the most accurate phrase for it. And this comes from Julianus Pomerarius, and the early Christian writers often duly distinguish this idea of righteous patience from their classical predecessors' definition of it. In contrast, a specific redefinition of patience in Christian terms seldom appears. Again, a long series of salacious negative exempla is the usual rhetorical strategy instead. On top of this general vagueness in the written works and commentaries, there are further roadblocks to achieving a useful definition of patience. For instance, even some of the early martyrologists seem to recognize that proving that an individual is patient is immensely difficult, essentially an act of mind reading. In essence, any definition of patience is hobbled by the fact that it is a negatively established virtue. Patience amounts to the absence of expected and more instinctual emotions, such as, for instance, anger. It's difficult to describe it as being anything itself in positive terms. On top of all this, patience has a tangled relationship with other virtues such as temperance, fortitude, and even caritas, to pick up the previous presentation, a relationship that is reflected in one way or another in quotations and in the cross-referencing techniques of the Manipulus Florum. One might be tempted to conclude that much of the intellectual history of patience in Christian documents only demonstrates how it merely lands among other items on an ever-growing list of desirable virtues, quote, without allowing itself to be really added in or totalized, according to Jacques Derrida's Reading of Intellectual History. And I love to bring Derrida into any talk because I know that he's Chris's favorite critic. But I would argue, the Manipulus Florum not only reflects this one tradition of righteous patience, Thomas's work also partakes in the study of patience as an intellectual concept. And in doing so, The Manipulus Valorum betrays a broader kind of content than one would expect for a volume primarily intended as a useful crib for the construction of sermons. The ideas of patience as miraculous and God-ordained are certainly present, as is the standard cornucopia of impatient behaviors that one should not tolerate. But such commonplaces of sermons do not dominate the patience lemma as one might expect. Meanwhile, the attention paid to patience definitions is instructive. I've already touched upon Thomas's use of a standard definition of patience from Gregory, and I might note that he includes three quotations from Cassiodorus that begin patientia est. Besides the types of quotations chosen from Cassiodorus, there are many others that suggest that the compilers of the Manipulus Florum and or their predecessors were concerned with providing readers and writers with various, one is tempted to say with progressive, definitions of patience. The variety of definitions hints at the disputatio tradition that is so central to medieval intellectual life and also has the effect of undermining the mere passive acceptance of miraculous patience as a kind of ruling idea. For instance, the quotations in the Manipulus Florum from Bernard of Clairvaux on patience are so blunt and proverb-like that they almost could have been written by the classical authors that the Manipulus Florum also includes on the subject. And of course, the nine quotations from classical authors on patience must, by definition, be outside of the idea of righteous patience. Five of these are attributed to the well-known Stoic Seneca, though only one is attributed correctly. Now, to be sure, Thomas announces in his preface to the Manipulus Florum that classical quotations are further down the hierarchical list from quotations that originate in the works of the Church Fathers. But his treatment of and attention to the works of one of the Church Fathers, Gregory, is important in understanding patience in the intellectual as well as in the righteous tradition. So, of the 48 items concerning patience in the Manipulus Florum, 19 are attributed by Thomas to Gregory, and all of these attributions are correct. This almost 40% of the patience quotations compares to less than 6%, three quotations from the authority that Thomas himself believes the most important after the Bible, that is Augustine, when Augustine wrote a treatise on the topic of patience and has much other material on the same subject in his Civitas Dei, many moral treatises, and elsewhere. Remarkably, Thomas provides only one item from Augustine's patience treatise. Gregory is vastly important in the history of patience, intellectually conceived, because much of his work on the subject comes from his professed program of trying to move Christians away from the idea that blood martyrdom is the most ideal kind of Christian activity. While trying to promote a more practical idea of day-to-day Christian service, Gregory finds himself reconceptualizing the idea of patience, I would argue. He uses the martyrs as examples of miraculous endurance, and therefore righteous patience, just as Tertullian and Augustine used them. But he also treats patience as a more concrete virtue by espousing more day-to-day modes of the virtue. It is significant that he defines patience, as I've already mentioned, and that this definition figures strongly in the patience lemma. The definition sounds much like Augustine's, but Augustine's in turn sounds much like Cicero's definition, the one that appears most commonly through the Middle Ages. And all three definitions have nothing Christian or miraculous in their content. Moreover, Gregory's definition appears under four different quotations in the Manipulus Florum. Why select passages where Gregory repeats himself? Why not cross-reference instead? These instances, together with the three definitions from Cassiodorus, show us that, if nothing else, Thomas was particularly interested in providing definitions of the virtue of patience. And in these quotations, Gregory tends to be more specific about what patience can do, as opposed to just describing it as a miracle. To give one example, Gregory suggests specifics about how the observation of patience in a person can provide insight into that person's soul. And that's number four on the handout. Also, Gregory's choice of equanimiter as is a suggestion for how the patient person should ideally act in his definition of patience is certainly in the tradition of Stoic philosophers from ancient Rome, whose attitudes are often described as indifferent, say, or more in the analogic vein, immovable is often the phrase used to describe what they're doing. In other words, the patient person commits the important act of, in Bakhtin's words, quote, continuing to be the same person, end quote, despite all the events that are happening around him or her. Gregory's use of definition and recall of Stoicism also bring to mind Aristotelian habits of classification. which appears elsewhere in his thought. Gregory distinguishes between mens justa ab injusta, the righteous and the unrighteous mind. In perhaps his most famous classifying list, he indicates the kinds of worldly cares that might threaten a person's patience. This is number 5 of the handout. Here, to be sure, he must be blamed for the flood of condemnations for impatient acts that late medieval sermons seem to positively relish. He indeed inventories a few rash and emotion-driven behaviors. But the Manipulus Florum reflects another tradition in Gregory that has the capability to transcend mere admonishment. Gregory describes at length an example of a much more positive demonstrator of patience, Job. And Gregory's Moralia in Job, rather surprisingly, achieves more excerpts in the Manipulus Florum than the famous Sermon 35. So in sum with Gregory, the very selection of Gregory as the star quotation source for Patientia, together with the content of these items, demonstrates Thomas's interest in patience as an intellectual rather than just a miraculous concept. I now turn to the third tradition that I mentioned previously, and that's patience as a personification. This one holds the most promise for elucidating patience as an intellectual concept within a literary genre, because I'm highlighting here an obviously literary device and mode of thought. Personification of patience comes from a long tradition that goes back ultimately, I would think, to Tertullian's De Patientia, probably the most famous and influential treatise from the early church fathers concerning this virtue. Surprisingly, no excerpt from this is included in the Manipulus Florum, and I don't think we know any excerpts from Tertullian at all as of yet. Isn't that right, Chris? Yeah. No excerpts, so far as we know, from Tertullian. When Tertullian is mentioned as with Tertullian, Ambrose, Augustine, Gregory, the four great fathers of the church, right? So it's rather surprising. In his description of an ideal patience figure in Tertullian's De Patientia, as I have argued elsewhere, Tertullian uses a rhetorical technique of playing with the reader's gender assumptions concerning the personification. The text is number 6 on your handout. The actual personification of patience is introduced obliquely, and even with a feminine pronoun that would suggest where the passage is going. Sorry, not even, that's the point. With a feminine pronoun that would suggest where the passage is going. That's omitted and kind of elided throughout the passage. Readers might even be unsure of exactly Tertullian's intentions and meaning until the description is well underway. Now, this pattern seems to be different on the surface from that of the Manipulus Florum, which, as number 3 on your handout appears to indicate, seems to prefer explicitly feminine personifications, in this case of the soul. Yet the quotations in Thomas's work tell a more complex story. Number 7 on your handout now, so this is over the page, a quotation attributed to one of Augustine's letters when actually the authorship is uncertain, seems to contrast a figure with inclined head and veiled eyes, much like Tertullian's patience figure, with that of a figure of true patience, which humbly endures injuries. In one of the quotations from Gregory, 8 on your handout, Job's praise of God is like the return of a javelin into the chest of the enemy, that delivers blows much stronger than the ones he received. If one imagines this aspect of Job as his patience, as seems reasonable, the personification is highly masculine. Or perhaps recalls that of patience in Prudentius' Psychomachia, where Patientia, although a female figure, fights against Ira using sword and shield. The Manipulus Florum is thus not as complicit in feminizing the image of patience as are other works of its period. In addition to the comparison of personifications, though, there are a number of parallels of intellectual traditions that suggest once again that the Manipulus Florum is not primarily a quotations bank for sermon writers, but instead a project that takes part in the growing, more secular intellectual movements of the later Middle Ages. 2 of the Gregory quotations from the Patience Lemma follow the Tertullian personification's use of metaphoric language and also employ its precise techniques of building towards ever more artistically intense descriptions of patience, until the image or images approach or even enter the realm of direct contradiction. I draw your attention again to number 6 on the handout, where the images at the end of Tertullian's description of patience verge on the mystical. You'll see there the image of the throne sort of floating on air and reference to the Bible as to what's happening, as how to describe patience. Like Tertullian, Gregory's texts seem to appreciate that patience is, in the end, so difficult to present as a characteristic aspect of human nature, perhaps so dangerously abstract an assertion to make about the possibilities of human virtue, when it's even reminded of Christ's analogies of what the kingdom of heaven is like in the Gospels. that language and expression themselves break down. A particular quotation shows the parallels between Tertullian's imagistic idea of patience and Gregory's. Gregory is here distinguishing between the man who is ignorant of the next life and the one who knows it. So this is number 9 on the handout. Besides the very sensitive understanding of human psychology that's on offer here, one cannot help but notice that almost baroquely contradictory language appears at the end of the passage, with adjectives contradicted directly by the sense of their immediately preceding adverbs, things like, you know, sweet, sourness, and so on. Very reminiscent of philosophical undertakings, certainly highly polished in terms of its rhetoric. One really wonders at the efficacy of this kind of thing as practical advice for conduct, for instance. A speaker of such a phrase might even be accused of demonstrating wit at the expense of sense. Even more similar to Tertullian's personified figure is the excerpt from Gregory's work that's number 10 on the handout. The image here that requires a kind of superficial, that equates a kind of superficial patience with a veil that attempts to cover up extreme emotions is again very psychologically astute, even reminiscent of Freudian concepts of the relationship of ego to id. But the veil also recalls the garments of Tertullian's patience figure, where the gender stuff is kind of cleared up by references to the figure's clothing. The Gregory quote, though, also forces the reader or listener to reassess one's gender assumptions, because a veil is associated with women rather than men, just the strategy in some ways that Tertullian uses. Generally, then, one may perceive that there is an intellectual tradition concerning patience that the Manipulus Florum is certainly party to. Moreover, this compendium encourages, in the variety of its quotations, a discussion of patience in highly artistic and witty terms, as opposed to the kind of discussion that Hannah found so endearing in its, quote, evocative diffuseness. Evocations of patience in this collection, I would contend, are instead defined, sharp, logical, and highly literary. Hence, they are altogether likely to produce patience discussions that exhibit the same qualities. Thank you.